Welcome to the Umbrella Hour. Your hosts are Dr. On, board-certified clinical sexologist, and Xander Keg, licensed clinical social worker. Our guest this hour will be introduced by none other than Xander, who does a terrific job of welcoming our guests. Over to you, Xander.
Yes, thank you, Dr. On. Well, we have a really wonderful guest for you today. I mean, I say that every time because all of our guests are wonderful, but I'm really looking forward to this conversation because it's a topic that I really enjoy talking about. And so our guest today is Andrew Kolsky, the sleep science guy, and he's going to share some tips on how we can improve our sleep. And he's going to be discussing in particular some sleep issues that might be unique to LGBTQ people. So welcome to the show, Andrew.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity. And sleep, as you know, is so important. And I think people are finding out is so important. So I'm really looking forward to addressing your audience about all these different issues that may be relevant to them.
Absolutely. As something I said before we hit record, and something I say fairly often is, in the work that I do as a psychoeducation webinar presenter, is sleep is the most important thing. I know there are things going on in the world. There's things that we're dealing with in our family. There's things that we're dealing with our own health. But it turns out that getting a good night's sleep every night doesn't get rid of any of those issues, but it surely impacts our response and reaction to them. And that is basically what well-being is about, right? It's about controlling for those things. Let's start off, right? Because you're the sleep science guy. And so let's talk about sleep science. What is sleep science? How long has it been around? And what are some of the most important aspects of sleep science that you want to share with us today?
Yeah. Fantastic question, because it is really interesting. So when we think about sleep, and it's funny because I had said to a colleague of mine who's not in the mental health field, I said, I'm working on this practice related to sleep. And they said, sleep? What is there to talk about with sleep? You either sleep or you don't. I said, well, yeah, but it's a little bit deeper than that. But I think a lot of people think of it that way. You sleep or you don't. But sleep science is a relatively new area. When you think of medical areas and you think of science related to health, mental health and physical health, for a long time, we've dealt with a lot of different issues. And when dealing with those issues, sleep generally has been sort of a byproduct. They think of it as a byproduct. Well, you're not sleeping well because you have these other medical issues. But it wasn't until really the 1960s, 1970s that sleep started to become recognized as, oh, it might be an issue in and of itself that may, in reverse, lead to some of these other types of problems. So really, the whole idea of sleep and sleep science and the study of sleep is relatively new, actually very, very young. And so when people go to get their mental health degrees, when they go to get their MD degrees, their nursing degrees, their medical degrees, most of them probably get no information about sleep in their training. And then they come out and they do their best, but because they're not educated about sleep issues, they don't know to look for them or they don't know how to recognize them when they come. So sleep science is all about what factors does sleep impact and what factors impact sleep, and how do we make all of that fit together from a scientific approach so that we can improve people's mental health and physical health.
That's funny that you said the comment from a colleague, you sleep or you don't sleep. It reminds me of I believe it was Matthew Watson in his book, Why We Sleep, that he was hearing people say, well, sleeping because we're tired makes about as much sense as we eat because we're hungry. No, we eat to survive, and we also need to sleep to survive, right? It's not just because we're tired or because we're hungry. These are basic things that we need to be paying attention to. You mentioned the factors that go both ways, sleep on well-being, well-being and sleep. What are some of those factors? And maybe is it related to their circadian rhythm, and how are they at play?
Oh boy, we could go for hours on that question. Let me try and boil it down for you. So let's talk about, for example, we know there's a lot of people out there from a mental health perspective that are dealing with depression, or maybe they're dealing with anxiety or something along those lines. And you talk to a lot of those people, and many of them will have sleep issues. The interesting thing is that historically, okay, well, then let's treat the depression, let's treat the anxiety, and then we assume the sleep will get better. But research has shown there's plenty of cases where the sleep is the thing that is leading to those challenges, and that if we treat the sleep, then the anxiety and or the depression can get better. So there's one example. Another thing that's really heavily being studied right now, we don't have answers or conclusions, but it's being studied and we're learning a lot more about it, for example, is the concept of Alzheimer's disease or anything related to that. And so there's a lot of research that shows that when we go to sleep, basically, let's start off with the fact that we have, let's call them four levels of sleep. You've got stage one sleep, which is when you get into bed and you're tired, but you're not totally groggy yet. You're getting ready to sleep. Then you get stage two sleep, which is where your body is resting and starting to prepare for a night of sleep. And then you get stage three sleep, which is your deep sleep, where your body is really focused on the heavy sleeping. And then you get to stage four, which is your REM sleep, which is where your brain is very active, but your muscles, your body is basically frozen in place. And that's where you're dreaming and everything happens. So in stage three sleep, which is the deep sleep, one of the things we do know is that's where your brain starts to do all the repairing. So your memory starts to get consolidated, your brain, the swelling goes down, not bad swelling, but just swelling from being used and active all day. That starts to go down. And then we have all of the cleaning taking place. So you may have beta amyloid plaque, tau tangles, things like that, that build up throughout the day in our brain. We get to stage three sleep. That's where our brain starts to, it's like turning on a dishwasher in a way. You're cleaning out all the bad stuff. So some of the theories are that if we're not getting that good stage three sleep, then we build up all that bad stuff that can lead to dementia. Now, other studies are not showing that way, but maybe those are just correlated, but not necessarily a cause for something. We just don't know enough about it yet, but it's an area of heavy, heavy research. So there's so many things about sleep that are related from a scientific basis that we could look into all different areas.
Unknown elders who were on heavy doses of medications or just and even some of the medications in younger people, if they're treated for hypertension or they're on statins, it can cause vivid dreaming. It can also trigger nightmares. Of course, the other element, which isn't talked a lot about, which are the medications that people are put on and the disruption that can trigger in people and not maybe having the choice of being able to change the medication or lowering the dose and maybe starting off with a lower dose and then working up to a higher dose. And so I was just wanting to comment on that I have had some keen interest in this area for those reasons, because I've met a number of elders who had terrible vivid dreams, not pleasant ones.
Yeah. Again, there's so much there to talk about too, which is, let's first just mention nightmares versus dreams. So nightmares are typically bad dreams that wake you up, whereas regular dreams, you don't typically wake from them generally. There's a specific treatment for nightmares that more and more people are getting trained in. And so there's one thing to address. But when you talk about the medications, yeah, it's very important. One of the things when I start working with a client is I want to know, are you on any medications? What are they? And so on and so forth, so that I can see if anything is having an impact on their sleep one way or another. The other issue with medications is oftentimes if somebody goes to their primary care physician or even a sleep clinic and they say, oh, I'm having trouble sleeping, they almost automatically get prescribed a pill. Most of the pills are sedatives or something. And if you read the labels, they say they are not for long-term use. They're for short-term use only. And also, what does a sedative do? Well, a sedative typically will get you to stage two sleep, but it doesn't get you to stage three sleep, which is the sleep you really need to get refreshed and clean out all the plaques and all those things. And so people tend to get hooked on these things and they just take them for years and years. And clients that come to me will say, I want to get off of these meds because it's not good for me long term. You know, I have different issues that are coming from it and so on and so forth. So that's a big area where we get into some of the new treatments. And Xander and I have talked about this a lot, the CBTI, for example, for insomnia, where you don't need medications. And the goal is to get you off of medications and get you good sleep. And then there's one other piece, as you're talking about an elderly population, that's also super important. There's actually a lot of other pieces, but one big one is a lot of clients will be people who have retired and they don't have a full calendar. And sometimes they are intentionally trying to sleep a little bit later to shorten the day because they don't know what to do with themselves during the day. They will hang out around the house, watch TV, maybe do some emails, read the book, read the paper, but their lifestyle is relatively sedentary. And so they're not doing a lot of physical activity or things to get themselves tired. And then as we get older, we tend to just generally, from a circadian rhythm perspective, go to bed earlier. And so they have trouble sleeping. Well, one of the reasons they have trouble sleeping is because they've been resting and napping and everything during the day. So they don't build up sleep pressure, which is necessary to get a good night's sleep. Then they take the medication because I can't sleep, but I really can't sleep because I'm sleeping too much. And all these things come into play. And then we have to clean that up. We could talk about more and more factors related to age related. This is why it's funny when the person said, well, sleep, you either sleep or you don't. It's like, well, not exactly.
Yeah, I was going to say in some of these instances, the elders were put on really heavy psych drugs to knock them out and see any improvement in those situations. The other thing I wanted to mention, because it was so intriguing to me, it was my home health days and I was asked to drop in to see a patient. And I wasn't really familiar with her. I was doing it on someone's behalf. Now, I mentioned this in my classes when I'm teaching my students, I mention it, even though it's considered a phenomenon and a rare one. And I can't really speak to that because I don't know how often people are actually paying attention when people report things. But I'd gone in to see her and she was fit to be tied. She was even having some suicidal ideation. And it was all over the fact that she couldn't sleep and she was afraid to sleep. When she did fall asleep, she was having these vivid, nightmarish dreams. She was a newly diagnosed insulin-dependent diabetic. So she was just put on insulin. I had spoken with a pharmacist. The pharmacist didn't feel there was anything to add or to, he couldn't figure things out. And I ended up going to the medical library and looking up her symptoms. And what I came across was Somogyi's phenomenon. Have you ever heard of it?
I actually have not.
Okay, so there's some disputes about it, but I can honestly say I had this situation. So I called the doctor. I had to be very careful how I presented this because I didn't want to tell the doctor what I thought it was, but I wanted the doctor to think about it. And the doctor was pretty much in tune and said, let's do this. Let's lower her dose, and then we'll titrate her up. We lowered her dose. And true enough, the nightmare stopped. Wow. She was able to sleep without having these vivid nightmares.
Mm-hmm. That raises so many thoughts in my head about different stories and things that I deal with. And this is why, to me, it's so important, whether you're in mental health or whether you're in physical health, to get a good understanding of your client's entire background. You can't just say, oh, they came in because they're not sleeping, so let's treat insomnia. You have to understand, why are they not sleeping? What's going on in their life outside? Is there anxiety? Is there PTSD? Is there a medical condition? You have to look at all these things. Look at their medications. What are they doing during the day? What is their diet like? What is their exercise like? I couldn't do my job if I didn't get all of that type of information because it's relevant. And one of the things that really comes up that is heartbreaking in a way is when we start to recognize that sleep and the fact that there are actual truly diagnosable sleep disorders based on different types of things. One of the things that comes up that I've been working on lately with a company is think about people who do shift work. So whether it be doctors or nurses, think about like security guards who work overnight and things. So what happens in a case where you've got a security guard, they're assigned to the night shift, and then the employer finds, oh, you were sleeping, you were napping, we caught you on camera, you're fired, right? With no thought at all, there's something called shift work sleep disorder, because what are we doing to your circadian rhythm? We're saying at the time that you're supposed to be asleep, you need to be awake. And at the time that you're supposed to be awake, you need to be asleep. And we give your system no time to adjust to that. And then we put you on a schedule where sometimes you work at night and sometimes you work during the day. There's no way for your system to catch up. And Michael Perlis, who I learned a lot from at the University of Pennsylvania, he says, it's a terrible thing to be asleep. It's a terrible thing to have to be awake when your mind is asleep, because your mind is asleep at night. So I'm now, and luckily some organizations, but we're talking a small amount, are starting to recognize that sleep is an important issue for their employees. And so they have people accessible to them that they can talk to about their sleep. And I'm trying to work with an organization now to set up policies and have a better understanding that this is a real thing that needs to be addressed. And the challenge I run into is you run into people and you say, we really should pay attention to this. And then you get, oh, well, they just need to go to bed earlier so they can be awake at night. Oh, okay. Great. That's so simple. So you just need to get the winning lottery numbers and you'll be fine tomorrow. Just go ahead and do that. It's very infuriating.
It's just so dismissive. But I think it's because people don't really understand the importance of sleep, the necessity of it. I don't think I'm exaggerating to say it's a life or death situation.
True.
When we go without sleep for long periods of time, it makes us crazy. It really does. And so anybody who works in mental health, you know this. When somebody comes in on a psych hold, the first thing you do is give them the kind of medication that knocks them out for like 2 or 3 days to give their brain a chance to settle down, to calm down. Another thing you were talking about was how key it is to have consistent sleep and the habit of it, but also the pattern of it. When you go from working daytime to nighttime shift, or even that intermediary shift, if it's a 24-hour workplace and you're doing 8-hour shifts instead of 12 hours, that really is very disruptive, because although we don't really think about it on a day-to-day basis, because we're living in such a modern world, our physiology and our neurology is still programmed to respond to when we lived in caves and we were governed by the light from the sun and the darkness of the evening sky. And so when that darkness or that lightness is perceived by our optic nerve, it sends signals into the brain to release certain chemicals that create a sense of alertness and awakeness, or the opposite, the sleepiness. That comes whenever I'm working with people. I say, you can be tired, you can be worn out, you can be exhausted. That's not sleepiness, right? Sleepiness is very different from that. And sleepiness is a biochemical response. It's not because you worked a hard day or because you really put it all out in the gym, right? It's sleepiness is a very different thing. And you mentioned the sleep pressure building. There's also sleep debt. So I'd love for us to get to that at a certain point. But you've also mentioned sedating medications, right? Sedation is not sleep,
right?
So for people who are taking medications that help them sleep, it's actually causing probably a lot more harm than good, because it's not just the quantity, it's the quality of our sleep, right? So if you take a pill or drink some NyQuil, you might be out for 7 to 9 hours, but it's not a good quality of sleep. And so both things are important. But you've also mentioned circadian rhythm a number of times. So I feel like it'd probably be helpful for people to understand what is the circadian rhythm, and also how does it influence the other parts of our different systems that we have in our body. I think that might be helpful for people to see how it's all connected, the neurology with the physiology and the emotions as well.
Yeah, there's so many ways to branch off with all of these things, because there's so much about sleep. It's not just the wake or sleep, but circadian rhythm. So let's talk about sleep in general, and I'll put circadian rhythm in perspective. Generally, when we are going through the day, we have daylight hours, and then we have when the sun goes down. During the day, when the day starts, when the daylight comes up, one, our body wakes up, and from that minute all through the day until we get to the sun going down, one of the things that happens is our body starts to build sleep pressure. Now, that's separate from our circadian rhythm, but sleep pressure builds throughout the day. So when you get to about 9, 10 p.m., you've got maximum sleep pressure, and that works in conjunction with your circadian rhythm that I'll describe in a second to put you to sleep. Your circadian rhythm is something that is guided by light. And what happens is everybody, I'm sure, has heard of melatonin, and many people probably take over-the-counter melatonin. And if they're taking it, I can already tell you they're taking too much, and I'll talk about that in a minute.
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg, and our guest this hour is Andrew Kolsky, the sleep science guy, who shares tips on how to improve your sleep and issues unique to the LGBT community. You can also check him out Instagram at Sleep Science Today or Facebook at Sleep Science Today. Let's take our commercial break. We will be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Andrew Kolsky, the sleep science guy. Let's pick up where we left off.
Melatonin is basically when there is light, your body is suppressed from making melatonin. So when that sunlight starts to come up in the morning, your body starts to suppress the production of melatonin, and this is why you're awake during the day. As the day starts to work towards the twilight and the darker times, then your body starts to release melatonin. So again, when you get to that 9, 10 p.m. hour, you've got maximum beginnings of the release of melatonin. You've got maximum sleep pressure, and this is why people, and again, it's age dependent, but generally they go to bed around 10 p.m., let's say. Once you go into bed, the reverse starts to happen. So your sleep pressure is now starting to be relieved because you're using up the sleep pressure as you're sleeping, and the melatonin in your body is being released throughout the night. But as it starts to get to 3 a.m.-ish, right? We start to get ready for the sunlight to start coming up. Our sleep pressure is starting to get relieved. And one of the things that our body does around that time, and everybody's a little bit different, but around that time, our body switches from doing those four stages of sleep I talked about, stage one, two, three, and REM, and it moves into stage one and stage two sleep. And it's not getting into that deep sleep anymore. So people say, you know, gosh, around 3 a.m., I tend to always wake up for a little bit. Why do I do that? Well, oftentimes it's because your body switches to the lighter sleep. If you've got sleep apnea, if you've got restless leg syndrome, maybe you're getting hot flashes, a lot of different reasons that can wake you up because you're in that lighter stage of sleep and then your body wakes. And this is one of the common types of problems that you hear about with insomnia patients. So the proof of the circadian rhythm part that you're asking about in terms of the light impacting it is that the treatments for a circadian rhythm disorder is either going to be adding or taking away light, depending on the problem that the person is having. So there's a general background architecture for you of how that works for our sleep.
Have you written books?
I do have one book out there called Why Can't I Sleep Well? And what that book is I took 150 of the most common sleep questions, and I gave answers with the research studies that provided the answers. So it's not a book of me saying, this is what I know. It's a book of, here's what the research says about this particular question. And I give all the citations for all the studies so you can look it up yourself and see.
One of the things that I talk about when I'm talking with people about the circadian rhythm in particular is that if we're not getting that good 7 to 9 hours of sleep, that's a good quality of sleep, then we can dysregulate, right? Or if we're sedating, or if we are consuming alcohol, which also can inhibit the stage 3 and 4 sleep, and then we're too light of a sleeper, and that's not going to be good. And also if we're exposing ourselves to a lot of light, right, through all the screens and just all the strong lights that we have, because again, our brain is wired for being out and in the starlight, and we're not in the starlight anymore. And so if we're disrupting, if we're dysregulating our circadian rhythm, I like to let people know what happens is it's connected to all the systems in your body. So all of a sudden, you might find that your mood is dysregulated. Your ability to keep your blood sugars balanced is dysregulated. Your ability to fight off viruses and germs, your ability to digest your food properly. Like, it really does impact so many different systems of the body. It's not just, oh, I'll make up for sleep on the weekend. Or you hear people say that flippantly, I'll sleep when I'm dead. Mm-hmm. Listen, if you accumulate this sleep debt, if you go week after week, month after month, year after year with not getting enough sleep and a good quality of sleep, it is going to manifest in so many different issues as you get older. And the problem with sleep debt, unlike financial debt, is you can't pay it off. You can't repay it. You can't set it back to zero. That's how important it is. And so but I find that, like you, it's because people don't know about sleep science and because maybe they've never heard any of this before. I'm sure we have lots of listeners. Wait, what? Why didn't I ever hear about this? I never heard about it in school. I didn't hear about it in gym class. I didn't hear about it in college. I didn't learn about it in my social work program. I don't know other people. But so it's one of those things where if this is that important, why aren't more people talking about it? Why am I not learning about it? And so one of the good things about the work that you're doing, right, with Sleep Science Today and with your podcast on the UK Health Radio Network, like us with the Umbrella Hour, you're getting the word out on that international level, right? Because more and more people, there's books being written, right? There's more things. Cognitive behavioral therapy and for insomnia is a very good technique. It's very successful, right? People can know that they can request such. It's not just any cognitive behavioral therapist, right? They have to be specially trained. Let's shift a little bit now, Andrew, to talk about what are some particular issues or factors or bits of information you think that we should know as far as members of the LGBT community as it relates to sleep?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's a lot of things that I want to talk to you about to answer that question. But before I answer that question, let me follow up on a couple of things you said, because it's relevant to the answers to the question. So the first thing I want to talk about is the sleep debt that you were talking about. And I had a guest of mine give a great example that I loved. And so I want to share it with you because it helped me to understand it. The fact that people who are up, maybe they love going out to the clubs at night, or maybe they work a late job, or for whatever reason they're up, they think about, okay, I'll catch up with my sleep this weekend. Well, this guest described it, and she said, think about if you didn't eat for 3 days and then you got a chance to eat a meal, are you really going to sit down and eat 3 days worth of food? Or are you going to only eat one meal's worth of food before you feel full? And that's sleep debt. You don't get to make up all that sleep. Once you've missed it, you've missed it. So that's one thing that's important. Second thing I wanted to follow up on was you were talking about alcohol So here's a common thing that I see a lot, and I think all these are relevant to what I'm going to be talking about. So a lot of people will tell you, and they'll swear by it, well, if I drink a glass of wine before bed, it helps put me to sleep. And the answer is, yes, it does. It helps put you to sleep. But the problem with alcohol is that it then gets processed by the body. And guess what happens in the middle of the night? You wake up. And so, yeah, it'll put you to sleep, but it's also going to wake you up in the middle of the night. They don't tell you that part of it. So I always make sure that my patients understand that that is not an approach that's effective.
Andrew, is that because it's converting into sugars?
Well, it's converting into sugars. The alcohol, the effects and all are wearing off as it gets processed by the body. It also wakes you up because now you need to go use the bathroom. There's a lot of effects that are going on that are causing that. The other thing about alcohol is a sort of a tangent here, but it's also important. The studies show that if a person is awake for 24 hours, then their system is operating basically as if they were a 1.0 on the drunk scale. So legally drunk typically is 0.08. 1.0 is where they are. So sleepy driving accidents are very, very common. People aren't aware of it. They're not aware. You know, they think, oh, you know, I'm a little bit tired, whatever. And then they get these little micro naps and they go through a traffic light or they run into the back of somebody and they don't even know it. So that was the second thing. And the last piece before I get into your other question is the melatonin part. And that part is typically because our body makes melatonin, we don't need melatonin supplements. But let's say in some rare cases, you decide to take a melatonin supplement. Well, I equate it to wine from a standpoint of this. The appropriate level of melatonin that is useful to the body is somewhere between 0.1 and 3 milligrams. If you were to go into the drugstore today to buy a melatonin supplement, you're going to find 5 milligram, 10 milligram. You're not going to find these small amounts. And when you take too much melatonin, then it can have the reverse effect, like the wine, and end up waking you up and things. So people are taking more and more melatonin because, oh, that's going to put me to sleep. It's not a sleep aid. Melatonin is not a sedative. Melatonin is what your body makes to tell it it's time to sleep and signal that it's time to sleep. So that's another common misconception. So I say all of those because I think they're relevant to the questions that you asked now about specifics related to the LGBTQ community, right? So let's talk about some of those. One of the things that is relevant is called minority stress. So this is a lot of stress that people, either from the LGBTQ community, maybe a different race, whatever it may be, when you're in a minority group, there's a lot of, unfortunately, prejudice out there. There's a lot of stigma sometimes. The way that people approach you or speak to you or give you the side eye or whatever it may be, right, can lead to a lot of stress that people carry. When they try to go to bed, it's not unusual that they're going to have trouble falling asleep, maybe. Maybe they're going to wake up with nightmares because of things that are weighing on their mind. Their sleep quality certainly isn't going to be this nice, restful sleep. So there's one of the issues that comes up. Another issue that comes up is we talked a little bit before about anxiety and depression. In the LGBTQ community, you've got a lot of anxiety and depression, obviously, for some of the reasons that I just mentioned. But think about it. Think about if you're one of the unfortunate people who's living in a home where you're not accepted, or you're living in an environment where you don't feel accepted. Depression is a natural response that we have. Anxiety is a natural response we have. Where am I going to live? How am I going to work? Maybe I'm working at a job and I don't want my employer to know about me. And then they find out about me, or I think they find out, and I'm afraid how they're going to react. And given the political environment we're in and the things that we see around the world today, it's a much more dangerous situation for people. So now they're going to get fragmented sleep, if any sleep at all, because they're worried about these different types of things. And that's what I was talking before about, is anxiety and depression causing the sleep disorder, or is the sleep disorder causing the anxiety and depression? And sometimes it can be both. How about a third one? Trauma, PTSD. We see a lot of that out there. Someone who was attacked or beaten up, someone who was fired, someone who was spoken to poorly in a public setting. You can go on and on and on of the different types of things that occur to the LGBTQ community. And those things don't just pass over and go away 10 minutes later. Those things stick with you. And think of a really bad example of someone who's getting bullied. How about a kid who's getting bullied at home by their parents or their older brother or whatever it may be? I've had clients who come to me for insomnia, and then they explain the situation where they're in a home where their dad might come in when they're sleeping and start beating them. Well, how do you expect a person to get sleep when their body, their fight or flight mode, their amygdala is saying, hey, I got to stay awake because that saber-toothed tiger may come and bite me any minute. I got to stay in tune. They can never get quality sleep. And I would not try. And I even told them, I said, I'm not going to help you get better sleep because you're in danger. And that's why you're not sleeping. You need to be prepared for that danger. We need to change the environment and remove the danger before we can talk about getting better sleep. So there's huge issues that come with that. And then another one is hormone therapy. Let's say someone's taking hormone therapy. The transgender community is big with hormone therapy, right? So there can be issues that come with hormones, just like we talk about medications and all these different medical issues. Those can have an impact. So there's a whole list of things that I would say are directly relevant to the LGBTQ community when it comes to sleep and sleep disorders.
Yeah, hormones are such powerful agents. What have you seen when you work with clients? What have you seen that brings you great joy in working with people who have come to you for help?
That's a great question. I'll tell you what just popped in my mind when you said that. The thing that brings me great joy when a patient comes in with sleep issues is someone who comes in and they describe to me the problems they're having, and then they describe to me really poor sleep hygiene and really bad sleep habits. And the reason that makes me happy is because, oh, this is easy. We can clean this up and they can start getting good sleep pretty easily. That's much easier than someone who's struggling with hot flashes or some other thing. So the reason, I think I told Xander this when he and I first met, I said, there's two areas that I focus on primarily in my practice. One is sleep and the other is obsessive compulsive disorder. And those sound totally different and have nothing to do with each other. But the thing that is similar about them that I really enjoy is they are both situations that, number one, almost nobody knows how to treat. Number two, they can be extremely distressing and disrupting for the client, and they really want help. And number three is that good help is available, and you can turn them around from a horrible situation to a good situation in a relatively short period of time. That's the Christmas day at the end of each treatment regimen, because now you see them walking out happy, and you know what they were like when they first came in.
Are you called on by clinics or even facilities where perhaps not just elders are residents, but also some of the youth who might be on ventilators? Are you ever called into those spaces to assist in any way or diagnose anyone or work with anyone?
So to date, I have not been. What I typically get is, number one, clients who have self-selected that they need help. I get clients who have gone to a sleep clinic, a sleep doctor's office. Maybe they got tested for sleep apnea or something, but then they found out they needed help with behavioral sleep issues such as insomnia, nightmares, CPAP compliance, et cetera, et cetera. So I get a lot of those types of referrals. And then I was mentioning how I've been trying to help organizations understand that this is something they need to pay attention to. But also, I explained to you the brick walls that you run into there trying to get that out. So one of the other areas that I'm working now to try and get the word out is, because I'm an attorney, I'm not practicing anymore, but a lot of attorneys, think about it, attorneys, doctors, people with these high stress jobs have a lot of issues related to sleep. And so the good news is that certain states, luckily where I'm licensed as a mental health counselor, Florida, Virginia, the Florida Bar, the Virginia Bar, both have these mental health components of their bar organization. And so my goal is to reach out to them to make them aware of these issues. And some of the super large law firms are putting money into people to address mental health issues. And hopefully I can convince them that sleep is one of those important matters. So yeah, we're still at the very early stages of this.
Mm-hmm. We will be taking our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Andrew Kolsky. We hope that you've enjoyed it so far. We also would like to encourage you to check in at theumbrellahour.com in case you'd like to appear on our show. We have a form on that website that you can complete, and one of us will get back to you. We are grateful for our sponsors and therefore always grateful to play their commercials. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Andrew Kolsky, the sleep science guy, who shares tips on how to improve your sleep and the issues unique to the LGBT community. Let's get back to where we left off. When I was working critical care in the cardiac unit, the sounds at some point wouldn't exactly stress me out, but I was cognitively aware of how they were affecting me at home. And it was during the beeper days when kids were walking around with beepers. And I had one child on a beeper because I had to rein him in. And we had this agreement, when I beep you, you better get home. And he had that understanding. And it was for his own good, let's put it that way. So anything from the cell phones, all that stuff. And I found myself getting annoyed with those noises. And I would change my cell phone ring because in those environments, nobody sleeps. Mm-hmm. If you're the patient, you're not sleeping. If you're the surgeon, you're on call, you're not sleeping. You have a room you go to, but I don't know really how much you are sleeping because you know you're going to get called and you're going to have to book to make it to that patient. Mm-hmm. It's got to be quite a task, I would imagine, for you.
Well, think about what you're talking about in the hospital environment, for example, and flip that for a second and think about from the patient perspective. And this is very, very fresh for me because I recently have spent a couple of weeks in the hospital with a family member. It is absolutely appalling to me that this is a medical environment. That is what they do, is medical healing. And to go into a hospital, to have a patient in a room, a patient who is very anxious, a patient who is very upset, and the family's there, and the family's working to calm the patient and dim the lights and talk slowly and play some calming music and finally get the patient to calm down. And as soon as they do, every 5 minutes, there's the bang at the door. And the worst part is, in the middle of the night when this is happening, you get the knock at the door swings open, and boom, the lights go on right into the patient's eyes. All the lights. It baffles me. You don't know to be calm and dim the light.
I agree. It doesn't make any sense, especially when it's time to take vital signs and the person is sound asleep. Sound asleep. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to take their vital signs. Different if it's a critical care case and they were in an accident and you're checking
for those reasons. But in most of these cases, it's not necessary.
Yeah.
My favorite is the when they come in to take blood at 2 a.m. It's like, really? You had to wake me up for that? Just take the blood already. The World Health Organization has determined that burnout is an occupational hazard. And I would think that sleep would be a major component to burnout. And so that might be a good way in, is to tie sleep with burnout and the precursors, right? The apathy and the compassion fatigue, which can happen to people who are medical doctors, nurses, lawyers, lots of police officers, a lot of people, right? And so part of the avoidance of burnout would be getting your sleep better taken care of. But they're in occupations where, again, they've got 12-hour shifts and they might fluctuate and they're on call. They're getting woken up by the bells that are going off in the middle of the night to go down the pole and get out to fight the fires. Because I know in the military, there is a significant emphasis on sleep of soldiers and sailors and Marines and airmen and Coasties as a former Coast Guardsman. So that might be a good in to use the World Health Organization's burnout occupational hazard as a way to get in with that work in particular, better taken care of. But they're in occupations where, again, they've got 12-hour shifts and they might fluctuate and they're on call and they're getting woken up by the bells that are going off in the middle of the night to go down the pole and get out to fight the fires. Because I know in the military, there is a significant emphasis with that work in particular.
No, I think that's a wonderful idea. And it's actually really interesting because as I was talking about the Florida Bar and the Virginia Bar and how they have the mental health. So a few years ago, the American Bar Association did this whole project on burnout and they developed these guidelines and all this stuff. And that's where, when I said some of the large law firms now are paying attention to mental health, that's where that came from, was from the American Bar Association burnout study. And I think that's a wonderful idea. I think you're absolutely right.
So, Andrew, before we close out, I'd love for you to tell the listener where they can find out more information about you and the work that you're doing. Is there a website they can go to?
So there's a couple of things that I think are important for people to know. Number one, if you go to the website, www.sleepsciencetoday.com, you'll be able to find this show on the UK Health Radio Network, right? You'll also be able to find our YouTube channel, our podcast channels, those types of things. So you can listen to the show there. If you go to the YouTube channel, there's additional videos and things that I have. I just put one up about, is it a lavender farm? Just to show how is lavender grown, processed? How does it get to you? What does it do? I like the video. I think it's a really interesting tour. So there's those types of things. Then for those people who might be having trouble with their sleep, I do a free sleep support group, and to sign up for that, it's online, and all you do is go to www.sleepsupportgroup.com, and you'll be able to sign up, and then you'll get notifications of our meetings, and you can join us free online. There's no charge. We don't sell anything. It's just a support group. And then Dr. Ahn had asked about the book I had put together, which is on Amazon. That is Why Can't I Sleep Well? And that's on Amazon, so you can find that there. So we've got a lot of things going on related to sleep science and trying to educate people. So that's how you can find me.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I'm really happy that you shared about your support group and how people can get into that and that it's available virtual and it's at no cost. So that's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful. Yes. Well, thank you so much, Andrew. It's been wonderful having you on the show and talking to us about sleep and in particular ways in which this might impact the LGBT community members who might be struggling with sleep for whatever reason. But right now it might be things that are going on in our world in particular. So just want to say thank you for that. Ahn, do you have anything closing out?
I just wanted to say how much I enjoyed this hour. It was really wonderful to meet you.
Thank you.
We have come to the end of the Umbrella Hour. Our guest this hour was Andrew Kolsky, the sleep science guy. We hope that you enjoyed it very much. Until next time, thank you for listening.